Wellington Phoenix versus Sydney FC on the 17th of July brings you
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City. It's our first Phoenix City in quite a while, and we're sitting at a table together, which is lovely, because we haven't done this in a while.
It's like almost 100 days.
Well, I've been more than that, because I haven't sat around a table with you since December. But
that's not true, Pat. You're in my house last week.
Oh, but that was different. Nobody's heard that podcast yet, so yeah. I'm joined by Frosty, Cam, and Dave, who are all here. How are you doing,
Hello,
gents?
Hello.
Thanks for asking, though.
I'm glad to be out of the house, I'll be honest.
I can imagine. You've been with children for...
Wearing a very black ensemble. Black on black on black.
I pulled out the black jeans earlier as well. I'm like, actually, probably going a little bit far, so yeah.
No, I really want to note as well, for once, you don't have the sunglasses, which
again,
I really enjoy.
I contemplated it purely for you, but left them sitting on the table beside my laptop.
So you might be able to hear in the background, but we're at a pub. We're down at the Churchill, official bar of the Phoenix. We've been at the Phoenix Members Night, where we've heard from Rob, we've heard from Ufi and Domi, a little bit of a panel discussion and some Q&A.
And Piney.
Piney was emceeing, but we didn't. I guess we heard from them. But yes, we've been hearing from them downstairs, and I think we're about to be joined by Rob Morrison. Rob, you just... been downstairs speaking to a bunch of the fans who could come out tonight at the Churchill. But thank you very much for joining us. How you doing?
Going well. So thanks, guys, for being here. It's a good turnout. Good number of fans here. It was really good. Really good to see everyone.
Let's jump straight to it. You mentioned tonight that the team are flying out Saturday. That's sooner than I thought it would, given all the talk this week and in terms of government and flights and all that kind of thing. But how's that come about? What's been put together to get that flight going ahead?
It's taken a lot of work. So getting all the various approvals in place, and to be fair, the plane is booked and we are waiting on the final approvals. So we're all set to go Saturday. And that's good, it's taken an effort. Everyone's been really cautious. There's a lot of hoops to get through. I think Greg O'Rourke has actually done a power of work in the last few days to make sure. Greg O'Rourke, who runs the A-League, he's done a power of work in the last few days to get this through. There's just a couple of little ticks that we need, and when that's all done, yep, they'll all be on the plane on Saturday.
So what were the moving parts that had to come together to be able to jump ahead and put that, I guess, quite a financial burden of booking a plane? What has to come together to be able to do that?
I mean, you have multiple bodies involved, so when the team goes, or anyone going into Australia, you're going into quarantine, so you've got 2 weeks of quarantine, pretty similar to here. The difference is that we're going there and we're asking for the players not to go into hotels but to actually be able to train. So that required sign-off by multiple government bodies, so New South Wales Health Department, the police, Border Force, and that, yeah, so it has to go through a whole process. The A-League itself, it put out a really, really detailed, I think 56 or 58 pages sort of... a manual in terms of coping or working through or process for working through isolation and quarantine, how they would train, how they would maintain separation and so on. And we've also done our own protocols, and so you put all that together, that the medical guys go through it, they signed off on it, Border Force at least sign off on it in terms of moving across borders. And then New South Wales Health have to sign off on it. So, yeah, it's a process. It takes a while to get through it. We're not the only people trying to get into Australia at the moment. Sports teams aren't priorities. We just got to go through it bit by bit by bit. No one gets to jump the queue.
So you move into the team going to Sydney, and they go into that kind of training hub that was similar to last time round, by the sounds of it?
Yep.
And from there, you then do that. And mid-July, it looks like the league's going to start again. It was the 17th of July.
Yeah.
And that game's against Sydney. What are the big considerations when you put together a draw that has, again, lots of things that could happen, borders, state borders, all that kind of thing? What are the, there's a few versions of the draw. What are the considerations on each of those that the club has had to be involved in creating?
Well, I mean, we're finishing a draw, so it's got a historical context to it. So if you remember it, when the season was suspended, we had gone to play in Australia. We were sitting in quarantine. They were still playing games, and the last game, I think, was Melbourne City playing Newcastle. I think it was the very last game. But that means that some clubs have less games to finish. So Melbourne City have only three games to play. We have six. And that means we've got to fit in more games. Sydney have six. Perth Glory have six. And Western United have six. I think of the four teams who have six games left to play. City have the least games to play. They have three. So the schedule has to fit around that. Also has to fit around the fact that in Australia you have border restrictions in each state. So flying between states is difficult. You can't fly into Queensland, for example. In the end, they decided the best structure was to play there a couple of games in Melbourne between the Melbourne side. So City and Western United, I think, are the first game there.
Yep.
Melbourne will play their games. And then the rest, and then everyone will shift to New South Wales. In the end, it was being expedient about what would best fit, and the New South Wales hub was the best way of doing it. Queensland had put up their hand, but it was difficult in terms of crossing the border, so it was easy to get everyone into New South Wales and play there.
You mentioned Hoops and Ulysses are coming back as well?
Yep.
On their own flights and their own isolation, their own training system?
Yep. So Hoops is already on the plane. He's on his way back. Ulysses is leaving. He will arrive into Sydney roughly the same time as the team.
Yep.
Hoops will be there. He's on his way already. In fact, I think he's in Dubai at the moment. So that's great. Both of them were just, you know, ready to go, which is fantastic. It's a great sign in terms of what Uffie's put together in the team. I mean, the spirit within the team is huge. And for them to fly back now, given all that's happening around the world, was actually, you know, was a really, really positive sign.
When you went over for quarantine last time around, there was obviously a lot of talk about the fact that the whole team were kind of up for that, and there was no one who didn't want to go. Did you find that was the same experience this time around, that everyone was excited to be involved and come back?
Yeah, so I obviously haven't spoken to all of them, so you know, but the feedback I've had is that yes, that was, everyone was up for it.
So that's looking forward. If we just look back a little bit over the last kind of 3-4 months, a lot of uncertainty through the time. We know a bit more about what was going on now, but were you worried for the future of the club when we were going into lockdown with no football, the league was being called off, no way for income, sponsorships potentially having the way to pull out? Were you worried about the future of the club?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, you're in a business which depends on you being able to play. So if you can't play, you don't have the business. So it's... these things don't exist on nothing. If, you know, I was asked this question by you.
Yeah, sorry.
and the fact is that professional sport doesn't exist if you don't look after the business.
Yeah, you
have to have a foundation there. So if you're not playing, there is no business, and you cannot survive for very long without playing. And that's the same for all professional sports. So all sports in New Zealand and elsewhere around the world face that. If you're not out there playing, then eventually the business behind the club will die, and that's the end of the sport. In New Zealand, it's even more difficult because you can't sustain sport at the level of investment available in New Zealand. For the Warriors, for ourselves, for the Breakers, if we can't maintain a presence in the league, you won't rebuild that out of New Zealand.
Yeah.
So it was really critical for professional sport in New Zealand that we didn't lose our places in the league. if the Warriors weren't able to continue to play in the NRL, if we weren't able to play in the A-League, the Breakers aren't able to play in the Basketball League, then that's the end of those professional sports here. They will not exist on their own in New Zealand because there's not the wherewithal, there's not the investment, nor are there the numbers to support those professional leagues. Even rugby would struggle, I think, to survive in New Zealand based solely on playing in New Zealand. The first few games, or the first games over the weekend, were fantastic. You know, it was great to see crowds there. Television numbers were good. They were really good games of rugby. But in the end, that's not their long-term solution. They know they actually have to have a league which has other teams involved. There's not the money involved in the sport to consistently support it here. It's just not.
Did you have to work with those other two teams in particular, you mentioned the Warriors and the Breakers, to lobby government to treat this as a serious issue? There was government funds that became available after the rest of the packages had been announced. Was that through conversations with those clubs, or were you all conversing separately, or did that just come from the government realising the situation that professional sport was in?
It was all of the professional sports franchises talking to each other, but talking with Sport New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And Pete Miskimmin at Sport New Zealand did a really, really amazing job in terms of actually getting to understand the interest or where all the clubs stood. And that was clubs and entities. You have a mixture in New Zealand between professional sports franchises who are effectively standalone and those that are owned by the NSOs, by the National Sports Organisation. So netball and rugby, the professional sports franchises and the players are contracted through the NSO, whereas in football and basketball, the Tuatara's sort of a hybrid model, and the Warriors all a bit different. So Sport New Zealand actually talked to all the franchises talked themselves, and then through Sport New Zealand talked to government as well about how government could help. And when government put out their sports package, the $264 million of support, part of that was structured towards supporting professional sport. But it's spread over a couple of years as well.
You mentioned the player contracts there and how they work. How much of it was a challenge that they all expired at the end of May? Because they were supposed to have finished the season by then. Was that an issue that you had to work through with the playing group, or was that?
Yep, and worked through the PFA as well. It helped that FIFA had actually made some early ground on that in terms of actually we need to roll contracts. FIFA couldn't dictate that, but there was general acceptance that everyone needed protection around that. So I think between the PFA, the FFA, and all the individual clubs, that worked pretty well.
And was the New Zealand PFA involved in that, or was that purely the Australian PFA?
No, New Zealand PFA.
And how much of a challenge was it, the fact that we were, I mean, Perth is in a similar boat, but at least they're still in the same country. How much of the fact that we were the one New Zealand club was a challenge in that those negotiations to get the league up and running, given that we were almost an outlier and making things probably quite difficult from a whole league perspective?
I don't think it made it more difficult for us. We are very integral to the league. We've got a good voice at the table, and we were very much part of all the discussions in terms of keeping the league going. Yep. We're certainly not an outlier.
Right, okay. Broadcast is probably the next question off the list. There was some things in the media today about how Fox have pulled all their content off their websites about the A-League, gearing up to pull out. Is there anything that has been that you've heard in terms of that about this season in particular? I mean, future season we can leave to another day, but this season in particular and broadcasting it?
I mean, nothing that I've seen that there is a negotiation going on. That remains open, and everything, my understanding, and I'm not really close to it, but my understanding is that it's still a very live negotiation around Fox covering the league this season.
So nowhere near as final as some of the things we've heard in the media today?
No, absolutely not. Cool. No.
Any questions, Dave?
I guess on the broadcast stuff, obviously the next season's its own beast, but if Fox is to pull out, that has big implications. I mean, you've talked about the lack of income for professional sport. That's a huge deal. Without that, the league kind of can't exist. And clearly the impression within those negotiations is that, you know, Fox are coming to the table more than the media would suggest. But if they are to pull out, that obviously has big implications for playing out the rest of the season and, you know, the league's future as an entirety. How real does that feel, you know, sitting around that table talking about that stuff?
I mean, it's the same for all professional sport. All professional sports are actually sitting there now faced with the fact that broadcasters are sitting there going, am what I paying, you know, the amount of money that I'm contracted to pay, is it worth it? So broadcasters around the world paid to have content. If you don't provide the content, then they go, well, hold on, you're not fulfilling your side of the bargain. So, you know, do we need to adjust the contract? And that is common to all professional sports at the moment. So I think everywhere around the world, people are looking at it and going, actually going forward, what's the right model? And this is absolutely not specific to Fox or the FFA, but there will be broadcast deals around the world where people look at them and go, actually, what we signed up for was actually more than what we should have signed up for. Is this an opportunity to renegotiate? Mm. And I think you will see that in the Olympics. You'll see that you know, with the postponement of the Olympics. You'll see that in football for sure. Broadcasters didn't sign up to have matches played in fanless stadiums. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it was the Premier League, but it was just dead watching those games, right?
I think the only thing, you know, that was positive was that as far as Aston Villa were concerned, was that the fact there were no fans there meant that the cameras were unable to see the goalkeeper carry the ball across the line.
Yep.
If there had been fans there, they would have seen it really clearly. So that was a good break for Aston Villa. 1 point. It's something that everyone has to look at and go, we need a fundamental reshift here, because in the end, you've had this. Probably a vicious cycle, but we're basically, broadcast numbers have gone up and player salaries got overinflated. So everyone has to sit there and go, actually, let's have a reset here, because when you have something like a COVID, you have to go back, look at the structure of the business being professional sport, and go, is that realistic? Do we need to make some changes here? And I think there will be some pretty fundamental changes to professional sports around the world.
Yeah, I think in many ways it probably is expedited a shift that needed to happen anyway, right? Yeah. It was not necessarily viability being the right word, but, you know, whether or not the A-League in its current state was going to be able to continue. You know, it relied on that broadcast money so heavily and that cycle of ever-increasing funds that it kind of had to rethink. And this has really compressed the time frame to do that, but it probably has brought to a head an issue that was going to arrive anyway.
You've got a couple of models there. Remember, you've got your pay model, and that's driven a lot of professional sport. But then a lot of professional sport does very well in terms of being broadcast on free to air.
Yeah.
And in the end, if you're going to drive commercial value for a product, you need a lot of eyeballs. So if your free to air eyeballs are higher than on a pay per view channel, for example. There are commercial reasons why it might be better to run with a free-to-air product. And a lot depends on where your league sits. So, again, without going, this will or will not happen as far as Fox is concerned, I think you have to look at it and you go, if, and I don't know the answer to this, but if Fox weren't broadcasting, is that the end of the A-League? Absolutely not. Do you need to broadcast a different way? Yes, you do, but is a free-to-air component right? Is an over-the-top model right? Are different streaming platforms right? There are a number of different models out there, and all professional sports will be looking at this going, what's actually the best model? But just because one broadcaster says, actually, we're not going to pay, doesn't mean that's the end of the league.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It actually means, okay, we've got to go and relook at things.
To bring us back to the football pitch to kind of wrap up, you've been an owner of this club for 8-9 years now. How good is that football that we get to watch every week when we're playing compared to some of that stuff that we've been through some of the years? It's great watching the team play the way that is, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you guys have a different view to me, but, or you might have a different view, but but I do think it's probably the best team we've had. And I think Offie gets the best out of them. I think there's really the great thing with the team is it's really positive vibes coming out of them. And I remember after the first four games saying to Offie, you know, don't feel there's no pressure from the club. Because you watch those first four games and there was no train smash there. You didn't feel, I mean, you felt bad because you weren't winning, but you didn't sit there and go, you know, this is all wrong. It actually all still felt right. We were going to move in the right direction. I think it's tough because we had some real momentum when we stopped.
Yeah.
I hope we can get the momentum going again. But certainly the contact I've had with the players, those that I have spoken to, is that they're really pumped about getting back out there. So, yeah, hopefully we have a really good run at this.
I guess one of the things you mentioned in there is kind of the fans getting to see the football. And it's a thing that's been speculated about in the media, and you talked about it earlier this evening, of a grand final potentially being in Wellington. What do you realistically think the chances are like of us playing football either at Sky Stadium or New Zealand fans being able to watch the Phoenix play live anywhere, I guess?
Well, yeah. If you asked me that 2 days ago, I would have said there's a better than even chance that we could play at Sky Stadium. Because we've had, you know, a complete meltdown in the system in terms of allowing two people out with COVID, not testing them properly, economic the impact of that is very big. I think that has materially impacted the chances of us having a Trans-Tasman bubble. We would need to have a Trans-Tasman bubble to have football played here.
Yeah,
and so yeah. Is it a 10% chance? I'd say it might be a 10% chance, but it's definitely changed. Start of the week, I would have said, yes, I think there's a serious opportunity for us to host a game at Sky Stadium, at least the semi-final, if not the final. The league were very open to it. I think this effort of the last couple of days has pretty much put paid to that. And it's hugely unfortunate because there are much broader economic ramifications than us. It's enormously important for the tourism industry that we open that border with Australia. They were very geared up towards a pretty big marketing campaign there, and now that's all on hold. So, yeah, I think we need a pretty serious look at what we're doing around the borders at the moment. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Rob. I'll let you go now and go back and have a beer or a whiskey or whatever you'd like to. I know Domi's partial to whiskey, so I've got one waiting for you downstairs.
Go and have a fortune favours.
There we go.
Sponsor.
And, we'll see you back here for whenever the games kick off, back watching the games on the screens of the Churchill, and it'll be a good time watching some football with some friends again.
Well, certainly I hope that, you know, from a fan point of view, that if you are able to come down and watch these games live, we want to try and build a decent atmosphere around the games. But I also think it's important, if you can, send messages to the team. They're away for 2 months. They are in isolation for a couple of weeks. We're all out of it. They're going back into it, going back into quarantine. So I think the more support we can give them over there, the more messaging we can send to the team, the better.
Yeah, we certainly will do all that as much as we can and try and facilitate what we can. Thank you so much, Rob. Cheers.
Okay.
We haven't had Rob on the podcast for a while, have we?
Long time. I remember doing an interview with him, I think it was probably about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I went to his offices. He mentioned it early tonight, the Save the Next stuff, and when David Gallup tried to kill the club. But I went to his office and did an interview with them, but I think that was the first time we've had him at the table with us during a recording.
It was a nice shout out to David Gallup there, mate. I noticed he got one downstairs as well.
Yeah, he got mentioned not by name, but Domi certainly called him on what went down in that little period of time. It was probably equal parts reassuring, equal parts eyebrow-raising about some of the stuff that has been done and what's going to happen going forward. And I'm a little bit more confident about this season playing out, but a little bit less confident about the future of the league. I mean, is that the same summation that you guys got from what we heard from both tonight, the members' evening, which the listeners haven't heard, but also that chat we just had with Rob?
No, I mean, I'm not less confident about next season. I think I'm probably the same because I thought Fox were gearing to pull out anyway, so I don't think I'm less confident about that. I am certainly more confident about this season going ahead. It sounds like it's pretty much paperwork, and then we're good. Obviously, certain players may not take part as early as they'd like, but...
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be overly pessimistic, but I think I'm probably going to come across this way.
Do it.
But, there remains all the same uncertainty that there was kind of before, for my mind. The broadcast deal remains very much up in the air. Obviously, Rob's a bit more bullish than the media are.
Yeah.
But it sounds there like there's still a lot of eggs in the Fox basket, which to me is a worry, knowing how Fox have traditionally treated football and also how they're kind of posturing at the moment. None of that seems good to me. And so I'm reasonably pessimistic about that. And, you know, I think there's every chance we do play out this season anyway. I think that happens. But whether or not we get to see it, I honestly don't know. Because if there's no broadcaster, you know, what does that mean? But he did talk about other models for that. And I think that makes me probably more optimistic for next season, that they're already exploring that and what that might look like beyond this season. That, for me, is where the kind of future of this lies. And it's good that they're looking at that and thinking about it now.
The only positive thing I can see about the Fox thing is they've postured before and kind of backed down. So I'm hoping that this is kind of just, it's taking a position, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
In their defense, last time they postured, though, the FFA were talking up $70 million a season and Fox got away with 55. So.
No, I mean just earlier this season, not even back that far.
Oh, wow. I still think they're posturing even this season that we've seen was just setting up for a legal battle. And I think the pessimist in me, which is why I'm sure I'm going to come across this way, says, well, it becomes a race to the bottom at that point of who goes bankrupt first in a legal battle. Is it the league or is it Fox? And I think some of the clubs are probably on more of a knife edge than Fox.
I think
that's not to say Fox are in a strong financial position, because they're sure as hell not.
I think to bring it back to this season in particular, I think that the FFA are doing what the NRL did and just saying, we're playing these games, here they are. And Fox kind of puts the pressure back on them a little bit, rather than being in this perpetual state of, are we going to schedule things, or are you going to come to the table with some money to schedule things? Like, that was just going to drag on for a while. I think FFA have said, to pardon the French, fuck this, we're just going to schedule the thing, and it's going to happen, and you're going to come and do it.
The problem with that move, though, is the NRL, when they did it, they were first cab off the rank, and they've actually got more money out of their broadcast deal by being basically the only sport broadcasting. But they're up and running, and that was a real strong move from them. Is being the third sport to get up and running in Australia that same power move? I don't know. I mean, and I don't think so. And I think that's why Fox are being a little harsher.
It has that problem, but the football could never be that, because there was much of that contract stuff that had to be worked out. The contract ended at the end of May, whereas NRL, it's just their season a little bit later than before.
Well, they'd already started. They were in the same position, arguably. They were midway through their season, just towards the beginning.
But their contracts went through to the end of the year rather than finishing in the middle of lockdown. So they have the advantage of being able to play games and not have to worry about getting new players on contract.
Yeah. Correct.
But changing their rules slightly for, you know, injuries and stuff. That's great.
What do we think about this plan to have multiple draws, or there's a plan B and a plan C depending on borders and that kind of thing?
I'd prefer if they just went with one now. Like, I get you want to make multiple decisions because you don't know what's happening in the future, but once you get to the point right now where you're getting everybody together, let's go in 4 weeks' time we kick off and we're going to go with this, so everybody can plan for that same single thing. If you get to the stage of playoffs, the playoffs are always up in the air anyway. They are, you know, week by week in the playoffs. You don't know where you're going to go. So that's cool. I can accept changing the rules at that point. But get the three or four weeks' worth of games done first and then worry about that. The guys need a little bit of certainty, some amount of certainty, which there isn't a lot of right now.
No, and I think that the reason for that uncertainty around this is, again, it's going to be so pessimistic, but it's about the money.
I agree.
It's about the fact that if they can play home games and have crowds at them, they really want to have the ability to do that. And I don't begrudge them that at all. If Adelaide is able to open up and you can play an Adelaide home game in Adelaide, they want to do that. They sure as shit want to have a crowd in a stadium paying money to get in the door. And I think there are obviously some discussions that I'm sure are going on about around this, you know, behind the scenes of how that will work. If that happens, does Adelaide get to keep all that money, or does everyone just agree it goes in a pot? Because some clubs, like us being a prime example, and Perth, I would suspect, being the other obvious one, and probably Brisbane with their harsh starts on their state borders will not play any home games. There is zero chance, but some clubs might be able to. And so, you know, Sydney being an obvious one, West Sydney as well, you know, all that New South Wales-based stuff will be under the same state rules, and they're already playing games there with limited crowds. If that opens up to being able to be a full stadium, why the hell wouldn't you want to play those games there? Shouldn't we try and play as many games in front of a crowd as we can? And that might mean having to change the draw a little on the fly, because you will schedule that to be in New South Wales in a hub and then find out, shit, we could actually play that game that's 2 weeks away in Adelaide in front of a crowd.
I think I'm kind of sitting between the two of you. I think the club, for example, is probably across all these plans. They can plan for the stuff. So they would they would know what the situation is and plans in place. So they're not in the unknown in the same way we are. But as fans, if we were to find out today what the situation is, it's every game behind closed doors. We can't go to them. So we couldn't plan to go to games anyway. So I think from our perspective, we'll be watching on TV, or even if in Australia in particular, and New South Wales and Victoria. If we leave it open, then in the future, we can have this a week in advance, we say you can come to the game. And we've seen here in New Zealand that actually our situation is a little bit different to Australia, but crowds flock back to a game. There's no standoffishness about coming back to a game. There's no standoffishness about crowds. Everybody wants that product.
People want to be with people, right?
I think part of it, though, is not just changing venue. I think it'll be changing timings.
And locations as well.
Yeah, locations definitely. But I think timings are very open to change here as well. If a certain state, for example, starts making noises like they're about to open by a certain date, why wouldn't you delay that game with the possibility of being able to do that?
Exactly.
And I think that's what they're leaving open. Whereas if they say that game's on this day and it's going to be in Sydney and then move it to Adelaide, I think that would be fine. But that's not what I think they're talking about here. I think the reason there's three or four different iterations of this draw is there are states more likely to be open to doing this than other states. I think Victoria, with their high case numbers, basically no chance anyone's going in and out of Victoria. So give that up. Play the Melbourne games before that. And Rob said that they were going to play the Melbourne teams against each other, play those derbies in Melbourne where you can, and maybe you'll have small crowds there. Maybe, you know, there'll be a 100 limit or whatever. But and then get them out of the state. No one's coming back. But South Australia, New South Wales, Queensland, still pretty hard on the borders, but low on cases. I mean, Northern Territories, Western Australia, Tasmania, all have the possibility of hosting games.
Yeah.
And maybe they're just building that into what they're going and saying, hey, let's plan a draw that says if on the 1st of July, which is still a few weeks away, we're allowed to play all these games, here's the draw for that scenario. Yeah.
If actually taking that another step, if you get to that case where, say, Adelaide is open and the Phoenix have to play them in a Phoenix home game, transferring the Phoenix home game to Adelaide, whilst we lose an advantage, we may actually get some revenue out of that.
That's the thing I hope that's been talked about around that table of the chairs and the league and whatever, is saying, actually, I think we all need to forego our ticket revenue this season. And then no one's got their own interest behind that decision. And it's, if we can play those games, we can get, you know, we can get ticket money coming in, great. That's good for everyone. It's not just good for one home team. And therefore, everyone should not bend over backwards, but do their best to try and facilitate that happening, because it benefits everyone. Imagine a sellout Sydney derby in Sydney benefiting all the clubs. I mean,
which is great.
That'd be fantastic.
And we've also got to play in New South Wales. In New South Wales, we've got to play Newcastle, Sydney, and Western Sydney.
Yep.
So all of those games, whether they're home or away, played in those stadiums would benefit. Yes, it would benefit them, but if the dollars are there and the dollars are there to be made, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Thank you for convincing me, Dave.
I don't know that I've convinced myself even, but I'm sure that's the reason, is it's driven by a financial need to plan that way. Because if you just go, we're playing all the games in Sydney and no one's going to be there, and then suddenly you are able to have crowds at those stadiums, wouldn't you be kicking yourself?
If you could.
Given the financial knife edge we know the clubs and the leagues are on, wouldn't you be kicking yourself when the league and the AFL have full stadiums and you're sitting there going, nope, we said we're doing it behind closed doors and we're playing Perth against Wellington in Sydney and no one came.
No one will go anyway, but you know.
Well, there's Phoenix fans in Sydney. I bet some people from Perth will probably fly over. New South Wales borders are open, you know.
I know plenty of people from Phoenix fans based in Sydney who have already said that they will go given any chance. Because they've got, effectively, they've got minimum six games that they can go and see in Sydney, at this point in time, and they would go.
Let's talk about the football that the team will actually play. Obviously, they've been in lockdown for 2 months, best part of 2 months. They've just gone back to training this week, I believe, now going into 2 weeks together. But Hoops and Ulysses, while they're coming back, which is fantastic, have to train away from the team and then come back together. Frosty, what do you think that will effect will have on the team as a whole in terms of being able to get what we had going at that end of the season?
Yeah, those connections were, that was, they were getting pretty good by the end. The passing between the especially Davila.
Yeah.
His connection with those guys, it took maybe 4 or 5 games to get going.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that they've kind of got an idea of what he's trying to do, but it never works out that way. Even if you've played with guys for years, you know, those first couple of games are scratchy at best.
Yeah.
Hoops, I mean, he's a bit like me. He's kind of, I'm not saying
that's football. Hashtag humble brag.
Wow. No, no. I have seen you play. It's very little similarity.
No, I was more meaning that
he goes
slow.
I was going slow and goes through the pack a bit when he's not running around. So I think he will struggle for fitness and whether he even gets his fitness back by playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's got to be the goal with him.
But he was only playing 60 minutes. I mean, I didn't see much of it, but the stuff I saw of him, he was only playing 60 minutes a game anyway.
Well, he just started getting getting fit enough to play, if not a full 90, certainly close to.
He's going to be in 2 weeks of intense camp as well. The physios, while they won't be able to directly interact with him, will be able to make him work hard for 2 solid weeks.
Do you reckon he's doing all of his stuff on Zoom calls? Like he's having to
even if he's not, right? Once he lands in the country and is having to isolate from the rest of the team, I bet they will be able to see him go, yep, we can see you're not doing that. Run faster.
They'll drop one of the fitness trackers off to him, right?
I can tell you they definitely have been doing Zoom meetings and Zoom training sessions with the guys.
Right, yeah.
But it's technical, obviously. It's all fitness stuff to keep them. And if you can, I think I've seen reports and photos from fans seeing Stephen Taylor out on the park near his house, and Stefan Marinovic out on the park near his house. So
I'm sure there are some of those guys who are keeping that top notch. And I think Uli would be an example. I expect him to come back pretty fit. But I think Hoops is a fair enough one to wonder. Maybe he'll come back little unfit, but probably not.
I'm not saying that he's not doing the training. He's just one of these guys that he just needs to be on the field and needs to be playing with the other 10 guys, really start getting it.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate because he came really good before the break.
Do you reckon this is going to be Asian Cup break all over again? Where obviously the team was flying high and then just plummeted afterwards?
I actually think I'm almost prepared to flag our performance for the rest of the season. As long as we make the playoffs, we have a chance because we can beat anybody on a day.
Yeah.
The next 6 games, because of the situation we're in, not being able to access our team, not having any fans there, we're away from home for up to 2 months. All the pressures that come with having to isolate for 2 weeks, not being able to have your family around, all that shit is going to make this a really tough proposition. And whilst we are a good team and we've been playing good football, those things might not impact us in game one, but by game 6, 100%, 100% they're impacting us.
I want to argue the opposite. I want to be optimistic about this one and say that actually, in terms of those connections and in terms of the training and in terms of the football, this is 2 months where the guys get to focus just on the football. They get to bond with each other. They'll be hanging out. It'll be, you know, a bit of a boys' trip, if you will. Not in the same way necessarily that the last one was. But, you know, they're going to be spending every minute together as a unit because they're going to be isolated from the rest of the world. And that means that all of that can be focused on bonding and it can be focused on the football. And I think that's going to make those connections really easy to work. Yeah. They're going to be used to communicating with each other and they'll be spending more time with each other than ever before. And I think across 2 months of that, the whole focus is football. It's going to be very easy to keep your mind on the football and the job at hand. And I think that's good. And there's no travel, which we normally have to deal with. You know, trips to Perth ruin us. We don't have to do that. If we're just based in New South Wales this whole time, hanging out in the same venue with a training pitch right there, training every day, and then, you know, going back and hanging out and playing some FIFA against each other, I think there's a real potential for that to be a positive rather than a negative.
I'm actually going to agree with Dave for a different reason.
Good.
I actually think that this is probably the best spirited team we've had. At the very least, going back to that, you know, 10-11 series team that we had, they weren't the best skilled, but they had a great spirit. These guys, I mean, when you can bring guys together and give them the opportunity to focus, and I think that Stephen Taylor's pretty much key to this, is that his ability to kind of rally people round and get them positive is really imperative. And the fact that he doesn't tire of that, I mean, we've seen now two seasons, you know, what, a season and a bit of him, and he still, every single time, never stops being positive, never stops pushing everyone around him. And I think having that sort of personality right in the middle of a squad and an isolated squad, so none of the negativity is going to get in there, they can just focus on one thing and there's a guy G'ing them up the whole time. I think, yeah.
Imagine just potential. 24 hours with Steve Taylor. Like,
it'd be fucking tiring.
It would be so, like, that intense.
It will be tiring. And they are having 2 months of it. They are going to
more
hate
tiring
each
than your
other.
Kids.
No.
Don't you even mention the Devils right now, because they are not in my mind.
Imagine being free of them
knackered.
For 2 months to focus on being good at football.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. But that's for me, and I can't play football. So,
hey, Frosty's comparing himself to Gary Hooper tonight.
Yeah, I'm not comparing myself to anybody in the Phoenix team.
Only in going
maybe,
to the
except
pack.
For maybe reckon, the role that they put over the pitch.
I reckon you could give Domi a run.
To be honest, you're as fragile as Louis Fenton.
Actually, that's probably fair. Yeah. But
who
no,
am I?
They will end up.
Who am I in the Phoenix team if we've got Gary Hooper, Louis
Rich
Fenton?
Rich Parkin.
That's not.
Hi, Rich.
That's not a player. He doesn't listen to this podcast.
So it's someone who's tall and uncoordinated in the Phoenix team.
I do like a golf cart. It's probably Ollie Sale.
He is not uncoordinated. Sorry, mate.
I think probably a reasonable thing to say about the potential for this 2 month lockdown is it could go either way.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a fair assessment. It could go really well. I think it could be a huge positive, and it could give the team the real focus and drive to get the job done that they all want to go there and do. But I do think there is a non-zero chance that it's tiring, that it wears them down, and that they suffer for it.
Yeah.
And we won't really know what that effect's going to be until we see it.
And you know what? It will probably actually go both ways, because some guys are going to thrive in this environment, and there's going to be some that can't deal with it.
Absolutely.
And for me, it's probably going to be the older pros are going to thrive, because they have been there, they've done tough stuff, and they'll be able to get their way through.
And some of them have left their kids behind.
Exactly. And the younger ones, who this is going to be an incredibly new experience for them, some of them, let's be honest, someone like Zach Jones and Sam Sutton, they aren't exactly a long away from home, right? So there's and they're not going to have that support network around that they are used to. It's going to be tough for them.
I think it really helps that they've done this before. They've done 2 weeks of this before. While they didn't get to play football and it was only 2 weeks, they know kind of what they're going into, and so you can prepare mentally for that. And so I think that will help that team in terms of, we're not going to this unknown thing anymore. We're going to something we've done. It's not the best thing in the world, but we know what we need to do for each other and get through it. I'm sure they're having those conversations. They go, what worked for us last time? What didn't? And focusing on those things, and Stephen Taylor will be great for this. Focusing
alcohol
on those
didn't work.
Yeah, and I think that's the big elephant in the room that we're kind of avoiding mentioning, is we saw exactly that. Some of the younger guys in the squad clearly had a blowout at the end of that last quarantine. And
I get that.
Admittedly, the circumstance was a little different, because at that point they knew they weren't going to play any football and they knew they were coming home.
Yeah.
But similar but smaller scale blowout could still be devastating to the morale of that squad, to the conditions that we're being allowed to go over there on, and all of that. It has to be a very real concern.
Do you think
we've seen where that could fall down?
So I'm okay with the blowout. I get that. And I was okay with it at the time that they had it. Last time they were over there, it was the poor decision making that came from the end of that was the issue. So,
to me, it was that. I think that's a good thing that it happened then, because now everyone knows that shit can't happen. Because if you're the second person to do that, your career's over. Forget it.
Well, two of them.
If this is the second situation of it happening, I think is a better way of referring to it.
Yeah. Is there anything else that Rob spoke about tonight that any of you want to hone in on for a little bit, or should we? Anything's there. You're getting. I'm going to give you. I'm going to pad out a little bit to give you a chance to think. And nobody's given me anything.
I think the only thing I would say that we probably haven't discussed in any detail that remains so uncertain was Rob talking a little bit about next season during the members' night.
Yeah,
and he discussed that kind of idea of pushing the start of the season a little later. with a view for next season being able to be played in front of live crowds. So being able to find that right balance between having a gap between the end of this season, whenever that might be, and the start of the next season. So maybe looking at something like a December or January start to a season, which obviously has flow-on effects for when that season ends. And the other thing he talked about that I found fascinating was there's a question from the crowd around, you know, that switch to playing a winter season rather than a summer season. And while Rob noted rightly that there are ups and downs to either scenario, he did specifically talk about his view within that kind of league leadership group that we should have a shorter off-season, playing a longer season and seeing us play more football kind of year-round makes a lot of sense. And I think it is a thing we know about the A-League is there is a very long off-season and it's quite odd. So whether or not you play summer or winter, a look to shift that league so it has a shorter off-season and we have more football, I'm on board with. That sounds great.
So I'm genuinely worried about next season for multiple reasons. The first one, obviously, we've covered already in Fox and the future of the broadcast deals. Rob has already discussed some of that tonight, and it's awesome that they are thinking ahead to that. But that's massive. We can't actually do anything until that deal with Fox is resolved. There's no guarantee that deal with Fox will be resolved quickly. Hopefully they come to the party and broadcast the games that are coming up. It's going to be devastating for us if they don't. But, you know, there's a lot of water to go out of the bridge in a very short period of time that covers off just those games. Next season is looking really a long way off at this point. The big one for me, though, is that international travel bubble. We've just seen this week how easy it is for things to go wrong when one MP from either side of the part of the political divide makes some poorly informed decisions, and 300 close contacts are now in having to self-isolate and get tested.
That's just 300 people are on the plane.
Yeah.
No, there was also a lot of people.
Yeah, no, but all that,
other people
that have
contacted.
All that stuff would have happened. Like, let's not make this COVID podcast, but all that stuff would have happened whether or not they left the bubble or not.
Absolutely. But it's just shown how easy it is for things to go wrong and how far you have to go before anything like an international travel bubble is going to be. It may not even be international. It might just be New Zealand to New South Wales that's possible, or New Zealand to Queensland.
I think
that's
the
possible.
Reality, though, there is the problem with the travel bubble is not on our side of the Tasman. We have so few cases. I mean, you look at Victoria, they had 18 new cases just today. In Australia, there is a very real number of cases still happening. That side of the travel bubble is the bigger problem for us than our side. But the thing is, New South Wales, for example, are just being very open and going, well, you know what? We've got cases. Stuff it. We're going to keep letting people in anyway. And that approach isn't going to change. So us being able to go to Australia is not going to be the problem. It's coming back, and it's then coming here that's going to continue to be the problem. Because rightly or wrongly, and whichever side of the political divide you want to sit on, we've taken a very cautious approach, similar to what some states have taken, Queensland being a prime example. Yep. And New South Wales, on the other hand, are taking a very, very non-conservative approach to how they're controlling their borders.
Let's call it an American approach, shall we?
Well, yeah. You know, and that's just the reality of the situation, and that's where the bigger problem lies. And until everyone has no cases, those difference in approaches are the bigger kind of butting of heads than whether or not we had cases or not. We could still have zero cases, but we still would probably not be letting New South Wales travel here because they have so many cases.
And
Victoria
that's the issue.
Definitely ain't coming here until they're not getting 20 cases a day.
And there's so many unknowns, but I'm really happy that we have a date, and hopefully we can stick to that date for the A-League to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. Watching some football on the 17th of July.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Down at the Churchill.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're going to come down
into
the atmosphere?
Well, you're saying the Churchill, but there sounded like there's still some negotiation to go on about which of the sponsors,
that is
several
true,
bars, it'll be in. But one of Wellington Hospitality Group's bars will be the venue.
I am desperate to watch a bit of football from one of my teams. I still haven't seen it happen yet. So
I reckon there's a pretty decent chance that if we win that game, Rob probably shouts some beers for whoever's there.
Yeah. All right. Frosty's referencing that his team won the Bundesliga.
Fuck yes.
Cam's team is going to win.
Thanks to Sarpreet Singh, right?
Cam's team is going to win the Premier League in a couple of weeks' time.
The 4 minutes.
Yeah, I just jinxed that for you.
I just When it happens,
yeah,
and then this, I'm going to be excited when it does.
I believe the word you're looking for is if.
And come mid
it's an if. It's a fit.
You said when. You were counting chickens, Cam.
And come mid August, the Venus is going to win the A League. So we're all going to be, all of us around this table are going to be very happy. Hey, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to this podcast. It's been a little bit of a break, so happy. If you want to hear our thoughts on the 2023 Women's World Cup bid, that's the announcement is next week. We're going to do that for our Patreon subscribers. So jump on the $5 tier on Patreon and you can hear that. But we'll be back. Maybe next week, maybe the week after when we have some more information or a match preview. That'd be nice, right?
We could do a match preview every week.
You just got really excited at the same time there and I heard nothing of what you were saying, but I'm going to wrap up there. Thank you for joining me, gents. Thank you for listening. Good night. Drinking bourbon at a pub brings you level. Vale.
Actually, seeing your faces brings you
a terrible experience.
Pain.
Yeah.